ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्री चैतन्य चरितामृत आदि लीला चैप्टर 9 टेक्स्ट नंबर 42। The chapter is entitled The Desire Tree of Devotional Service. So we don't have it on the board. I'll just read out the verse.
Etavat janma safalyam dehinam iha dehishu pranairarthair dhyavacha shreya acharanam sada.
So the translation goes as follows. It is the duty of every living being to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, wealth, intelligence and words. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. There are two kinds of general activities, shreyas or activities which are ultimately beneficial and auspicious, and prayas or those which are immediately beneficial and auspicious. For example, children are fond of playing. They do not want to go to school to receive an education, and they think that to play all day and night and enjoy with their friends is the aim of life. Even in the transcendental life of Lord Krishna, we find that when he was a child, he was very fond of playing with his friends of the same age, the cowherd boys. He would not even go home to take his dinner. Mother Yashoda would have to come out to induce him to come home. Thus, it is a child's nature to engage all day and night in playing, not caring even for his health and other important concerns. This is an example of prayas or immediately beneficial activities. But there are also shreyas or activities which are ultimately auspicious. According to Vedic civilization, a human being must be God-conscious. He should understand what God is, what this material world is, who he is, and what their interrelationships are. This is called shreyas, or ultimately auspicious activity. In this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that one should be interested in shreyas. To achieve the ultimate goal of shreyas, or good fortune, one should engage everything, including his life, wealth, and words, not only for himself, but for others also. However, unless one is interested in shreyas in his own life, he cannot preach of shreyas for the benefit of others. This verse cited by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu applies to human beings, not to animals. As indicated in the previous verse by the words Manushya Janma, these injunctions are for human beings. So the previous verse is a very important instruction by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to all people born in this Bharatvarsha. The instruction goes as follows. Bharate Bharat Bhumite Manushya Hoila Janmajar Janma Sartaka Kari Kari Paropkar. He is instructing that anyone who is born on the most auspicious land of Bharatvarsha, his sacred duty is to make his own life purposeful and also to share it with others. So we'll resume. Unfortunately, human beings, although they have the bodies of men, are becoming less than animals in their behavior. This is the fault of modern education. Modern educators do not know the aim of human life. They are simply concerned with how to develop the economic condition of their countries or of human society. This is also necessary. The Vedic civilization considers all aspects of human life, including dharma, religion, artha, economic development, kama, sense gratification, and moksha, which is liberation. But humanity's first concern should be religion. To be religious, one must abide by the orders of God. But unfortunately, people in this age have rejected religion and they are busy in economic development. Therefore, they will adopt any means to get money. For economic development, one does not need to get money by hook or by crook. One needs only sufficient money to maintain his body and soul. However, because modern economic development is going on, with no religious background, people have become lusty, greedy, and mad after money. They are simply developing the qualities of rajas, which is passion, and tamas, which is ignorance, neglecting the other quality of nature or sattva, which is goodness, and the brahmanical qualifications. Therefore, the entire society is in chaos, and so are our lives. The Bhagavatam says that it is the duty of an advanced human being to act in such a way as to facilitate human society's attainment of the ultimate goal of life. There is a similar verse in the Vishnu Puran, part 3, chapter 12, verse 45, which is next quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurum Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Very much for encouraging me. So, it's our pleasure to welcome all the devotees to today's Sunday Feast program. The verse and the purport which we discussed today is of great importance for all practicing devotees. Srila Prabhupada mentions here that there are two kinds of activities, Shreyas and prayers. Prayers are activities which yield instant gratification, and our entire market is flooded with instant gratification goods. Many people here are more expert than me, so I won't venture into that. But Shreyas are activities which are concerned with the ultimate benefit. And Srila Prabhupada gives here an example. A child, it doesn't want to go to school. It wants to play. And that's an example of prayers. He likes to watch cricket. He likes to sit down and watch TV all whole day, following the footsteps of the parents. But the parents are a little inconsistent. They want the child to go and study, go to school. It's a torture for the child. But then the parents know better. They know that even though the child is unwilling to go to school now, later on he'll be very grateful. Right? There was a boy who was very much addicted to stealing somehow from his birth. Sometimes we have tendencies right from our childhood. And he liked to steal. He would steal tomatoes from the fruit vendor, from the vegetable vendor, started stealing pencils. And his mother would just say, "Nice, sweet little child. So many tricks you're playing, so many, even Krishna stole butter." And in course of time, this child became so expert, he started stealing very valuable goods from shops. But the mother didn't stop. And the propensity kept manifesting more and more, and it reached its crescendo when the child, when he grew up, he murdered a person in order to do some stealing. And he was to be put in prison. So he was asked, "Do you have any last desire before you enter the prison house?" And he said, "Yes, I just want to beat my mother." And he went to his mother, and seemingly he posed himself to whisper something into her ears, but taking that pose, he just bit off her ear. And she was in pain, and everyone was seeking an explanation, "Why you did this?" He said, "If my mother would have stopped me in the childhood from stealing, then I wouldn't have had to see this day." Of course, what the child did was foolish. But the point is, everyone acknowledges that there are long-term goals and short-term goals. And in order to achieve long-term goals or ultimate goal, one may have to compromise on the short-term goals because we have only 24 hours. Right? And also, often the short-term goals may stand in contradiction to our long-term goals. So Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing the importance of Shreyas, or activities which are beneficial. However, the entire world is bombarding us with prayers. Get this, add this additional cable channel, there are already 50, add this 51st, you'll be happier. Difficult to believe, but people do it anyways. So many bombardments all over the billboard, and the billboards are constantly being revised. Every week a new ad comes up. So there's so much bombardment, and today we will focus on an important point. How, in the face of such bombardment, can a devotee seriously practice Krishna consciousness? Right? The devotee already has his habits. So many bad habits we have. This human body, Prabhupada says, these instructions actually applies to human beings. Human beings have a special prerogative over the animals. The animals are tiranga. They're often called tiranga, which means the body, the belly and the genitals are on the same line. So there's no discrimination. The head is meant for the belly and the belly is meant for the genitals and vice versa. There's no discrimination. So this is often quoted in the Shastras, but human beings are not Tiranga. The intelligence is first. It means, what is the goal of my life? They can think. So this human body is very special, very rare. Lord Krishna, in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, is giving many detailed instructions to Uddhava. So there are two Gitas. One is the Bhagavad Gita, and then there is Uddhava Gita, spoken by Lord Krishna to Uddhava, his very dear friend. Lord Krishna often says that, in many pastimes, he actually says this, that I see the world through Uddhava. I see events through Uddhava. So Uddhava is very dear to Lord Krishna, and he is giving him instructions. One of the instructions he gives Uddhava is in the 20th chapter of the 11th canto, verse number 17. And he says, Nudeham adyam sulabham sudurlabham plavam sukalpam guru karnadharam mayanukulena nabhasvati retam puman bhavabdim nataretsa atmaha. So this human body of God is very special. It's very difficult to obtain, but still you have obtained it very easily. Right? It's very difficult to obtain, but it's very easily obtained for all of us somehow by the Lord's arrangement. Plavam sukalpam, but this body is like a boat. This material world is like an ocean with sharks, with whales, with huge waves, sometimes small waves. Small waves leading to huge waves is a big surprise. And then there are cyclones in the middle of the ocean. But the human body is said, plavam sukalpam. It's very nicely engineered to take us beyond this ocean. So you can have put faith. Krishna is saying, if the manufacturer of an instrument says that this can take you from point A to point B, we can put some faith in him. Of course, it's not some manufacturer, it's Krishna saying this. So therefore, this body is perfectly a cube. But there are some important instructions to follow. You need a guru. You are in the middle of the ocean, and the ocean can spring surprises, but a person who is expert at the ocean, a captain, who has been trained himself in how to look at the ocean, how to understand the symptoms, the signs in the ocean. The small breeze is coming, but this means there will be a cyclone coming tonight. Or the captain looks at the waves and he understands things are going to be more difficult. Let's take a different route, a detour. So the captain is adept at all these things. So plavam sukalpam, you need a captain, and the guru is a captain. He doesn't give you just philosophical instructions, but practical instructions. And guru karna dharam. And then Krishna is saying, mayanukulena. The words spoken by the Lord are favorable winds. Anukul means favorable. So if the boat has to ply across the ocean, it needs favorable winds. Krishna's words, which are the Vedas, they are favorable winds. Puman bhavabdim. And so a person who doesn't use his human form to cross over this ocean is an atmaha. He's a killer of the soul. He's simply cheating himself. He's ruining his life. So this is Krishna's verdict. Parang Prabhu was giving a lecture day before yesterday. I heard that. He was giving another parallel. He was explaining how this human body is like a Mercedes-Benz. First class Mercedes-Benz. In contrast to many other cars, which we won't name. Not to demotivate anyone. But there are other cars, but Mercedes-Benz stands out. So human body is like that. But unfortunately, this human body is also equipped with a time bomb. You have this Mercedes-Benz or a time bomb stuck, and you go and sit down there, and there is a huge notice put up. Time bomb inside. It's not even mentioned where the time bomb is. And you have no guarantee. By the time you search for the time bomb, it's gone. The car is gone. You're gone. So this human body, even though it's so beautiful, there's a time bomb attached. And no one knows when it started. No one knows when it will blow up. Right? None of us can guarantee. Not even the doctors can guarantee. So, therefore, given this restricted time we have in this human form of life, how to use it most effectively to cross over this ocean? So that, Srila Prabhupada says here in the purport, towards the end, the Bhagavatam says that it is the duty of an advanced human being to act in such a way as to facilitate society's attainment of the ultimate goal of life. So we have to act in such a way that we can facilitate the society's attainment of the goal of life, which includes our own attainment of the goal of life. Because we, charity begins at home. You first preach to yourself. You first implement in your own life. Feel satisfied. And then give it to others. So that will be the focus of our discussion. And the title is basically, how to align our lives for Krishna. How should we align our lives for Krishna? So, as we already discussed, this requires a lot of work in some sense, because there are many forces acting against our alignment. There are winds blowing in the opposite direction, especially in Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga circumstances are actually quite unfavorable. People are simply quarreling. There is the politicians are creating artificial shortages. So much, especially when election times come. In every country, they create artificial shortages and then impress upon the people that I am actually a supplier. So in the face of all this, we have to very carefully use this human form of life, as Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport. So in order to practice Krishna consciousness, it is very important to align our bodies, our mind, our desires, with that of Krishna. This is very important. Srila Rupa Goswami explains that taste or ruchi arises when there is an alignment of one's activities and one's desires. We will delve on this point a little bit more. So let's just look at the dictionary definition of alignment and look at practical examples from our everyday life. So the dictionary defines alignment as the adjustment of an object in relationship with other objects, right? So if you had a microscope, you need the tube of the microscope aligned with the lens on which you place your organism. If they are not aligned, you might land up seeing your fingertips and make completely wrong conclusions, right? There are many other, if you have a wheel in a vehicle, it has to be properly aligned with the other wheel. Otherwise, your vehicle will never move. In mechanical engineering, there's something called shaft alignment. I'll just read out. There is sequence alignment in bioinformatics, body alignment in sports and dance, and especially those who perform these acrobats. And then structural alignment, morphosyntactic alignment in linguistics. If you look at the structure of an airplane, each nut and bolt has to be very carefully aligned with the other part. If there's a small misalignment, that could be a last journey. So airplanes are very carefully engineered, and not just engineered, they're maintained very carefully. So in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna makes a very interesting point. He says, Yogi yunjita satatam Atmanam rahasi sthitha ekakiyata chittatma nirashir aparigraha. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, the sixth chapter is entitled Dhyan Yoga, and he's telling Arjuna, a yogi or a transcendentalist, that's how Srila Prabhupada translates, a transcendentalist, what should he do? He should engage his body, his mind, and himself. The word Atma stands for all the three, the body, the mind, and himself. The self is different from the body and the mind. These three should be engaged. Yunjita means engaged in relationship with the Supreme. That's what Krishna is saying. So based on this, we will visualize the alignment which we require in our lives. We have this body, and this body has a door. And as Krishna will explain in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we can adjust the door and open the door. We have limited control on it, but we can do that. Krishna is giving detailed instructions to Arjuna on that. So we can align the door, we can align our body towards the ultimate goal of life. The second gate to alignment is the mind. Again, that door, we have an access to that door. We have to be determined and control our mind. Yes, Krishna is supremely merciful, but we have to show our attempt. So the second door is the mind. The third door is a self, or the self is basically symptomized by consciousness or feelings, right? So feeling is a symptom of the soul. A camera which is recording a drama will have no feelings, but we have feelings. So feelings, aligning our feelings towards the ultimate goal of life, which is Krishna. But the fourth door of alignment, which Krishna mentions here, he also mentions the fourth door of alignment in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He says, Adhishtanam tatha karta karanam cha pratak vidam, vivida cha pratak cheshta daivam chaivatra panchamam. He talks about five factors of action, and the final factor of action is the supreme. So Krishna, the final door of alignment is with Krishna. And that door doesn't open your side, it opens his side. And the access to it is him. He only has it. But Krishna emphasizes in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita and so many other places in Uddhav Gita, how we should align our body, our mind and feelings towards the ultimate goal of life. If there is a misalignment between these, what happens? Rupa Goswami predicts that if there is a misalignment, we will lose taste. And it is true in any activity. If your mind is somewhere else, your body is somewhere else, you will lose taste. There is misalignment. To give you an example of misalignment, there is a story from the scriptures. A very pious Brahmana, a devoted Brahmana, was married to the daughter of a king. And the king was a great devotee, the daughter was a great devotee. And as is the tradition, the daughter had to move to the house of the poor Brahmana. So Brahmana was poor. So she was living in a humble dwelling with the Brahmana. And the Brahmana also had his mother and father staying in the same house. And as it sometimes happens, the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law had some leelas. So the mother-in-law would often jab, you know, the daughter-in-law, you're not doing this properly, etc., etc. Any case, that's not the subject matter of discussion. So one day, there was a visitor at the house. And this visitor knocked the door. And the person who opened the door was the daughter-in-law. When she responded, the man asked, where is your father-in-law? Where is the main person in this house? And she said, he is a bit busy right now. He's repairing his shoes. Could you come after a couple of hours? And this visitor said, okay. He left. He didn't ask more questions. He came back after some time. And this time, the person who answered was the mother-in-law. And this man asked, can I meet your husband now? She said, yes. Is he relieved from his shoe repairing business? She said, shoe repairing? This lady was confused. He was never repairing his shoes. My husband is very pious. He's sitting in the temple hall for the last so many hours. Who told you he's repairing shoes? This person was intimidated. He said, actually, your daughter-in-law told me. She told you? Of course, she started off. Anyways, so this man was directed to the temple hall, and there he went, offered obeisances to the deities, and then offered his respects to this Brahmana. And he saw this Brahmana was doing some japa. And he asked this Brahmana, so, dear Brahmana, can I meet you? He said, yes, yes, you can meet me. And he said, I'm a little confused. Please resolve this. I came a couple of hours back, and your daughter-in-law told me that you are repairing shoes. And I come back just now, and your wife, beloved wife, tells me that you've been in the temple throughout. So how do I understand? Who's speaking the lie? Who's speaking the truth? And this Brahmana started laughing. He said, my daughter-in-law, she's very devotional. She understands devotional service in the three modes of material nature. Krishna explains to Uddhava how you can perform devotional service affected by the three modes. She understands that whole of yesterday I've been trying to fix my shoe, but I was unable to fix it. So during my japa, I got an opportune, it was an opportune time to meditate on how I could fix it. There were some alternatives I didn't try yesterday. So I was just meditating on that, and she was very intelligent. She understood what's occupying my mind all the time. So we all encounter, I personally encounter this misalignment. Sometimes you have slept early and you are completely prepared in the morning to chant your japa. The body is completely alert, but the mind goes here and there, completely out of track. Sometimes you have planned so badly and you have slept very less, or you had a big paneer feast at 12 in the midnight, and you get up for japa and you have nice Krishna conscious sleep. So if we all encounter this, it means we have to make an endeavor to chant our rounds properly. We have to make an endeavor to perform our Krishna conscious activities with full absorption. Govind Prabhu was explaining in today's morning class that for a person who is completely absorbed in Krishna, who is on the transcendental plane, he has to make an endeavor to stop chanting. If you are on that platform, probably the rest of the discussion is not for you. But if you are not, I sincerely pray that the discussion will be helpful to you. So what happens when there is a misalignment? This is also explained in several places in the Srimad Bhagavatam. As already testified by Sri Rupa Goswami, when there is this misalignment, the first symptom is that you start losing taste. You don't have taste. And as we already mentioned earlier, this applies to even other activities other than Krishna consciousness. But it's not really in our interest to discuss how to align activities for your business. Once one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples came to Prabhupada and said, Srila Prabhupada, I'm starting off a business and this business is for Krishna. Actually, it was for Krishna. And he requested Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, please give me some encouragement for my business. And Prabhupada smiled. He said, for business, everyone is giving you encouragement. What you need encouragement for is for Krishna consciousness. How you can use your business for Krishna, that's where you need encouragement. So even though there are so many activities where we may be not 100%, what we need most is alignment for Krishna consciousness, because that is Shreyas. Everything else is prayers. So the second symptom after loss of taste is quality of service gets affected. If you try and draw a beautiful figure or write in nice handwriting on a page that is cluttered with very bad handwriting, this is bad handwriting. I tried that actually. You will have little or no motivation to bring out the best within you, right? If you want to write, draw a beautiful painting on a very dirty piece of newspaper, it's very difficult, very hard. But if you were to do the same thing on a clean sheet of paper, you have enough motivation. It works. That's how it works. The mind, that's how the science of the mind is. So similarly, when our life is in a mess, which in other words, misaligned, another aspect or symptom is that quality is severely affected. You don't feel satisfied in whatever you do. It's like going to a shop. You know, sometimes we go to a shop with good intentions. But then you go to the shop and start inspecting the latest goods, Reliance Fresh, and then you look at all these new things, very cheap. My mother was relating to me how she went to buy a small milk bag, but then landed up buying 1,000 rupees worth goods from this Reliance Fresh. So it often happens, you go to the shop and then you want to buy something according to your agenda, but then you land up buying so many things, either due to the influence of partners or, you know, someone accompanying you, and then you get them back home and stare at all these goods. My goodness, why did I buy all of them? I already have 10 copies of each of these. It happens with many people. So when our life is a mess, that's what happens. We put all our endeavor into activities and then lament. You are chanting around and suddenly you get a phone call, and because our mind is not regulated, we speak for half an hour, 1 hour, and then regret like anything. This could have waited. This could have definitely waited. So that's another symptom. Quality takes a beating. And then we are always running around as if the hair is on fire, which means everything is last minute. We have a completely reactive instead of proactive approach, because the least important things have gone on the top. So these are some symptoms. Your house can be a mess. Your room can be a mess. Your room can be a paper factory and your mind can be a thought factory. So you just you're chanting your rounds and you're getting 50,000 thoughts in 1 minute. So this is another symptom. So this misalignment, dear devotees, each of us has to judge for himself, because Krishna consciousness is a very subjective process. It is subjective because the subject and the object are the same. Krishna is, of course, the object of our worship. But as far as the spiritual advancement is concerned, we are the subject. We are following the process. So therefore, every devotee has to introspect seriously. Krishna explains, one of the austerities of mind is maunam. Maunam means he's very gambhir. So we have to become very internalized sometimes to inspect, are we doing the things we really want to do? So this is a very personal process. It is not that because one has spent a lot of time in Krishna consciousness, things have become perfectly aligned. Not necessarily. A disciple went to a guru and said, dear guru, I have gone through the Bhagavad Gita 30 times. And the guru very sweetly asked the disciple, has the Bhagavad Gita gone through you even once? So it all depends on our own sincerity. Now, sincerity is important. Srila Prabhupada was once with Giriraj Maharaj, and Srila Prabhupada asked Giriraj Maharaj, how will this movement go on after I leave? So Giriraj Maharaj explained or replied to Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, if we are all very sincere, then the movement will go on. Srila Prabhupada said, yes, sincerity is there, but you also have to organize very nicely. So yes, we are sincere, that is true. But if you are really sincere, it should reflect in how we organize our lives, how we organize things around us. And that's exactly what Srila Prabhupada also referred to in this purport. So, if you are sincere about spiritual advancement and honest, that means we are trying to align the third gate, which is of our feelings. But let us look at the alignment of the other two gates, which is the body and the mind. So, we will discuss these aspects taking into account different factors that affect the alignment of the body and the mind. One of the most important aspects is habit. We have often habits that have been inculcated for so many different years. It is said that it takes around 30 to 90 days to change a habit. So there was one disciple who went to the guru and asked the guru, dear guru, I need to go to a far off place. So please help me. The guru said, yes. Here's a horse. And I give you two sutras or two mantras. If you want the horse to fly, just say, thank God. And if you want the horse to stop, you should say, save me. That's it. And the man said, that's all. Guru said, that's a lot for you. But the disciple couldn't figure it out. He thought it was very simple. And he just boarded the horse and he thought he's Napoleon marching around the world. He was going fast, going across deserts, rivers, different terrains. And suddenly he saw that the horse was on the top of a mountain. And the horse very soon approached a cliff. And now he started getting really frightened. He started forgetting the mantras. What am I supposed to do now? The horse is going full speed. I'm on the edge of a cliff. And just as right when he was on the edge of the cliff about to fall, in desperation he called out, save me! And the horse stopped. He was so happy. He was so happy. He had a big grin on his face. His heart was overflowing with gratitude. And because he was God conscious, he dovetailed his gratitude to God and he said, thank God. And that was it. So our habits can have a very strong influence on our day-to-day activities. Yeah. Devotees sometimes complain that I'm trying to get up early, sleep early and get up early, but I land up sleeping early and getting up late. How do I change this? The thing is, you need to have some patience. Krishna in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita says, Shanai shanai uparamed buddhya dhriti grihitaya atma samstam manakritva na kinchit abhichintayet. Saying shanai shanai, slowly, slowly, step by step, gradually. But you have to have buddhya dhriti grihitaya, with intelligence fixed determination. So Krishna is giving the prescription. You have to have your intelligence fixed determination. But that's not as easily done as said. How do we have this determination? So then we come to the second point. We need the right environment. We need the right environment. Everyone has to have the right environment. It is often said that environment is stronger than willpower. Even if you make a firm resolution to study, let's say tomorrow is your end semester exam, and you made a firm resolution, I'm going to study very intensely today evening. And your favorite friend gives you a phone call. And soft-hearted as you are, you talk to him and he says, today is my birthday party, today evening. And you can't say no because you've been trained to say no, trained not to say no. And you go and attend the birthday party, but then you think, I'll take all my books. That's okay. I'll please him at the same time study. And you take your books, sit in the birthday party. How many of you think you'll be able to study? It's going to be very difficult. Very difficult. So if you had the choice of sitting in a library and studying, as against sitting in a birthday party and studying, any sane man will choose, or woman will choose to study in the library. Because even if you are feeling sleepy, there are people all around you studying. And then you feel enthused, I should also study. And you see books arrayed all around you. So many different books. And you think, my goodness, I have so much difficulty with this one book. There's so many obstacles I have to cross. So it gives you some little push. So environment makes a big difference. So the environment also can be categorized into an environment or the state of the body, the state of the mind, and the state around the body. So we'll just discuss about the environment we should create in the body. Now, if you look at the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna step by step talks about how to align the body, then how to align the mind, and then culminates with how to align one's feelings. Right? Krishna starts the instructions of the 6th chapter, Dhyan Yoga. Shuchau deshe pratishtapya stiram asanam atmanah nati uchitam nati nicham chaila jinakushottaram tatra ekagram manakritva yata chittendriya kriyah upavishyasane yunjat yogam atmavishuddhayet. Then he says, samam kaya shirogrivam dharayan achalam stirah samprekshanasi kagram swam dishashchanavalokayan. Giving very detailed instructions. How you should sit? You should sit with your head, neck and back straight. Right? And then, don't look around. Because if you look around, you'll meditate on everything else. Look at the tip of your nose. So he's giving instructions where the body should be seated. Don't sit in a very opulent place. Sit alone, not in the midst of so many other people. It's for yogi. And sit on a kusha grass, very simple. Not dirty, but simple. Govind Prabhu was explaining that simplicity doesn't mean dirty. So in this way, he's advising a yogi, and actually many places it is translated as transcendentalist, the yogi, which means it applies to everyone. Srila Prabhupada was walking with a sannyasi disciple in Bombay, I think it was Juhu Beach, and they both happened to see some yoga practitioner, I mean Hatha yoga practitioner, teaching different Hatha yoga procedures to his disciples, and all were going up, down, this way, that this way, that way. And the disciples started chuckling, sannyasi devotee. And he actually commented that they're just wasting their time. But as Govind Prabhu today morning pointed out, Srila Prabhupada, he would never criticize any person. He would always find the good. And he actually told the sannyasi disciple, why do you say that? In the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches the process of yoga. There's a lot we can learn from them. How we should regulate our body. How we can make this body a very favorable place for Krishna consciousness. If you eat very heavily and then sit down to practice japa, you will feel sleepy. Not surprising. Right? So, one sannyasi devotee was saying a nice point. He was saying that, live your lives in such a way that you do not have to deal with your body in the important hours of Brahma Muhurta. Sometimes devotees ask, I feel sleepy during japa. Many times the reason is insufficient sleep or sleeping during improper hours. The kind of sleep you get between 9 and 12, the quality of sleep you get between 9 and 12 in the night is double the quality of sleep you get between 12 and 3 in the morning. As the time progresses towards the morning, the quality of sleep decays. It's a science and everyone accepts this. So anyways, we can align our body in such a way that we are prepared, fit for practicing bhakti yoga, especially during the morning auspicious hours of sadhana. The state of the mind, actually state of the body, one nice story I heard. One disciple came to the guru and told the guru that, Gurudev, I am finding no taste in japa, like this. And the guru asked, what happened? No, I'm frustrated. And he was like this. And he kept on going, kept on going, kept on going, kept on speaking. And the Gurudev, he observed for a long time. Then he said, it is working. He bowed down and his face changed. The mood changed on his face. And he said, yes, I can see it is working. The Guru was trying to impress upon the disciple that if you have a very negative state of your body, which is unconducive for spiritual life, of course, you will feel depressed. The body has a great function to do with how we practice spirituality. For example, if you're sitting, you're chanting cozily and chanting your japa, it will have an effect on your japa. If the neck, head and the body being in a straight line is recommended everywhere. Because when this is done, the chances of sleeping is less. The chances that mind will wander is less, because this sitting straight has an effect on the vayu circulating within the body, which in turn has an effect on the mind. Or if you're sitting and watching cricket match and chanting, of course, you'll meditate on something else. So every devotee has to chalk out for himself, what is the most favorable place for my chanting? Somebody may have a temple room. Somebody may not have a temple room, but may have a nice park outside to chant. But you should be very careful. If you're sitting in the park where everyone is playing golf and you've been attached to golf, that's probably a bad place for you. So as we already discussed, it's a very personal process. Every devotee has to work out what is the most favorable place for his chanting. But please work out. It is absolutely required. We cannot act on the spontaneous platform. It doesn't work because we don't have spontaneous love. The second is the state of the mind. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 6th chapter, verse number 4, which is an instruction by Lord Rishabhdev, he says, Nityam dadati kamasya chidram tam anu ye rayaha yoginha krita maitrasya patyur jayeva pumshali. He's saying, very strong statement. He's saying, an unchaste woman is very easily carried away by paramours. And it sometimes happens that her husband is violently killed by her paramours. If the yogi gives his mind a chance and does not restrain it, his mind will give facility to enemies like lust, anger and greed, and they will doubtlessly kill the yogi. Mm-hmm. Kill. Mm-hmm. It's stronger than what even Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, Bandhur Atma Namastasya Yenatmai Vatmanajita. Anatmanatra Shatrutve. If the mind doesn't become a good friend, then it will just become an enemy. But here, he said that the mind can kill us. It can kill our spiritual life. So Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that in the morning, our first business should be to beat the mind with shoes 100 times, and before going to bed, to beat the mind 100 times with a broomstick. In this way, one's mind can be kept under control. Night broomstick, morning shoes. I often get confused. So, anyways, the idea is not to do that literally. Otherwise, you'll figure in the Times of India. But the point is really to discipline the mind. Disciple means discipline. It is required. Srila Prabhupada was very heavy with devotees for discipline. You need to discipline your mind, discipline your activities. Once one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, he said, okay, if sometimes while chanting, mind wanders here and there and we are not so attentive. Srila Prabhupada asked his devotee, then why are you wasting your time chanting? Of course, that doesn't mean that one doesn't sit and chant if the mind wanders. But the point is, Prabhupada wanted it absolutely clear that while chanting, our 100% effort should be to discipline the mind so that we simply hear the holy name. There's no question of thinking. As Govind Prabhu was explaining today morning, if we keep hearing the names of Krishna, there's no question of thinking about anything else but Krishna. But as long as we are not on that state, there's no role for the mind. Simply hear the holy names. That's a top priority. So even Govinda Das, he makes a prayer to the mind. So you may beat the mind with a broomstick, or you may request the mind, as Govinda Das says, you know, Bachahure mana Srinanda Nandana Abhaya Channar Vindare. You can make a pact with your mind. You can even write an essay, dear mind, please. You can do it in the night. I was recently at a japa workshop organized by the Bhagavad Life devotees in upstate New York. And one of the important points that came up, many of the exercises, was actually requesting the mind very personally, offering a prayer. Please, mind, tomorrow I have to chant 64 rounds. Please cooperate. So otherwise neither will you be benefited nor will I. So in this way, one has to discipline the mind. One can offer prayers. Personal prayers one can write. Krishna consciousness is a very personal process. So Prabhupada would often encourage devotees writing poems personally to Krishna. Of course, following the Siddhanta and not digressing. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that only the mind which is pure can be attentive, and mind can be purified by satisfaction. Mind can be purified by satisfaction. 18th chapter, Krishna tells Arjuna, Manaprasadat saumyatvam, sthairyam atmavirigraha, bhava samshuddhi ityeta tapo manasamuchyate. The austerities of the mind is keep it satisfied. Yes, so much I have already got. Just before you sleep, it's a very good practice. I personally do that, it works like magic. Just before you lie down, express your gratitude to Krishna and all his representatives for all the good things, all the mercy that was shown to you throughout the day. Prasadat, somehow or the other, we should keep our mind satisfied. Mana prasadat, that's how it will be purified. One crazy person, Ashila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was giving a lecture about chanting Hare Krishna and regulating the mind. And this person asked, Swamiji, what about my mind? And Prabhupada said, chant Hare Krishna, that's the only medicine I have. That's the only medicine actually. Keeping it satisfied and keeping it subdued and satisfying it by chanting the holy names. So we have to practice that. There is no other way. And Krishna dedicates a whole section in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita talking about how to keep the mind satisfied. Prashantatma vigata bihi. He is giving a lot of instructions. The third aspect of environment is the state of our activity, the state of the place of our activity. So there was one preaching center in Europe which was going through a difficult time somehow, and devotees were struggling, and Srila Prabhupada had a darshan with the devotees who were having a tough time. Prabhupada just told the devotees, all you should do is go in front of the deities and chant the holy names in front of them, praying to them very personally. And when the devotees did that, till date, they are so grateful to that instruction. That instruction Srila Prabhupada gave is still reverberating in their mind. So a very favorable place for chanting is in front of the deities. Or as Gaur Kishwardas Babaji Maharaj used to often advise his Grihastha disciples, he would say that while you are chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, you should just read out Mahamantra written on a board. You write the Mahamantra and read it out as you are chanting. And he told his Grihastha disciples that if you keep doing this as you are reading the letters of the Mahamantra and chanting, there's no question of eyes going here and there. If you have to read, you can't see anything else. Then gradually you'll see Radha and Krishna appearing from those letters. So one should use the Shastras, one should use the Acharya's instructions to find the most favorable place. But that also requires some planning. As Srila Prabhupada told Giriraj Maharaj, yes, sincerity is good, but you have to organize your lives in such a way that you have the right environment for chanting. You have the right environment for reading. There's a nice article, which I don't have access to right now, but there's an article by Bhurijan Prabhu, Srila Prabhupada's disciple, about how one can do very prayerful reading. The next point is association. So that's also a very favorable environment for chanting, for performing devotional service. Lord Kapildev says, Satam prasangad mama virya samvido bhavanti hritkarna rasayanam katha. Satam means devotees. In the association of devotees, one should hear the holy names of Krishna, one should hear Krishna katha. If you are in the temple brahmachari ashram, you already have a great opulence. But even if you are a married householder, Srila Prabhupada would often recommend in his purpose that the husband and wife should sit together and hear Krishna katha, read together. Many of us must have seen the Hare Krishna World video, right? And in that, there is a very beautiful scene which still strikes me. There's a Japanese devotee, I don't remember his name, the Japanese devotee and his wife and his children, all of them come together, do Mangalarti together, read together, and then all of them go to school, come back in the evening, again they have Aarti together, read together. Now, devotees may think it's just too idealistic, but it's not. If you're serious about the goal of life, we should try our best, try to bring out the best we can within our circumstances. So association is so important. It's said that 10 meters radius around a person, his vibrations have an influence. So just you're sitting in the office throughout the day, how much influence, negative influence we carry. So it's very important to have a positive association. It's also said, family that prays together stays together, right? I think it's a biblical saying. But praying together for devotees means a lot. Chanting is a prayer. Reading is a prayer. Honoring prasadam is a prayer. I heard that Radhanath Maharaj instructed the brahmachari devotees that two most important things for them are having brahmachari class together every day and having prasadam together every day. The prayerful activities do together in the association of devotees. And he said it will work like magic. So the same thing to whatever degree possible can be adopted in every situation we are in, whether we are at house or whether we are staying in a base setting. We should just become serious about these points. Vaisheshika Prabhu, one of Srila Prabhupada's wonderful disciples, is a first-class Vaishnava. He often encourages the family members to come together and chant one chapter of Bhagavad Gita every day together. Everyone likes to chant. But if you plan it out, you can do it so nicely, creating a powerful vibration at home. So chanting together, even in the temple, they had this Bhagavad Gita club. Right? Brahmachari devotees would come together and chant one chapter every day. Radhika Vallabh Prabhu was leading that, I heard. So, if you do not plan this way, the right environment, gradually you'll find that materialistic activities will overtake us. The next aspect, which I'll try to speak very briefly about, is time. So, environment was one aspect. The second aspect is time. I was recently in New York, and we had a program at the Columbia University. The way the program runs is that we have groups formed, and in each group, we have a topic assigned. So in my group, the topic we were discussing about was service. And though we start off from Srila Prabhupada's translations, we give a chance to everyone to bring out points that strike them. And after some contemplation, one of the members, who was a professor in the linguistics department at the Columbia University, brought out a very striking point, a point that is striking me till today. He was saying that the first thing that comes to my mind when you have to perform service, right, is that you have to make yourself available. Mm-hmm. Right? Sometimes we tell devotees, yes, I can take this service. Yes, I can do this. Yes, I can do this. But then suddenly we find we have no time to do it. Right? It happens all the time. It's a good practice to ask this question when you take up a service. When? Mm-hmm. Yes, I will do this service. When? Yes, I chant 16 rounds. When? Otherwise, you'll find that you have no time for it or you don't have quality time for it. The most amazing part is Krishna, as super soul, is saying that sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishtaha. Krishna is sitting in everyone's heart as Paramatma. And he's always available. Mattaha smritir jnanam apohanam cha. Krishna makes himself available 24 hours a day, 365 days. He doesn't sleep when we sleep. He doesn't sleep. So Krishna is all the time alert, willing, available to be our great friend, as explained in the Mundaka Upanishad. Samane vrikshe purushoni magno. Two birds in the same tree. But Krishna is always alert, always available to help us, to render service to us. So therefore, it is so much imperative that we take out time from a busy schedule where we make ourselves available exclusively to Krishna. It's so important. Otherwise, you'll find you have no time, even though you have all the time in the world. Like in business, there's a saying that if you have some work to be done, give it to the person who's the busiest because he'll find time to get it done. So therefore, it's very important to allocate time. It's good to divide our entire day into bites and then allocate time for different activities. It's good to even allocate a fixed time in our activities. Vaisheshika Prabhu, again, Srila Prabhupada's disciple, makes a very powerful point. He says, if you want to plan out your life, you need to plan out your years. And to plan out a year, you need to plan out each month. And to plan out each month, you need to plan out each day. And to plan out each day, you need to plan out each minute and each second. Ayushak shanam ekopi nalabhye swarna koti bhi. Chanakya Pandit says that even one moment lost cannot be retrieved by paying millions and millions of swarna, carats of swarna. So for a devotee, time is just like a businessman, he's all the time counting money. All the time counting money. Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan with the devotees and they had the inauguration of the Punjab National Bank. And Srila Prabhupada and the manager of the Punjab National Bank were asked to speak on a topic. On a topic of their choice. And Srila Prabhupada was in a very jovial mood and he started explaining Dhruva Maharaj was asked by Kuvera for any benediction. And Dhruva Maharaj just told Kuvera, I don't want any of your wealth. Just give me blessings so that I can become Krishna's servant. So Prabhupada said, similarly, now your bank is just by our side, so we have all the facility to take money from you. But only blessings I ask from you is that I can remain Krishna's servant. And the bank manager, in jovial mood, replied. He said, Swamiji, there's a saying, there's a story that a man, he had to have a heart transplant. And he needed a new heart. So when this was to happen, he was given choice. You can either take the heart of a general, you can take the heart of a surgeon, or you can take the heart of a banker. And this man was given the choice. He said, you can give me either surgeon or general, but don't give me the heart of the banker. And this manager said, you know why? Because he knew that the banker's heart is never used. Which means he is ruthless when it comes to monetary transactions. So, any case, Srila Prabhupada often used to say that these people who are so money conscious, all the time counting, one paisa gone, they get so upset. So, similarly, a devotee is very calculative when it comes to time. One of the devotees who exemplified this quality is Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was so conscious of time. Every moment he would value. He would, in fact, carry a pocket watch all the time. And he would keep looking at it from time to time, whether things are going on schedule. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he quotes a verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, 22nd chapter. These are instructions by Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami, verses 78 to 80. And he explains that 26 qualities of a pure devotee. Kripalu akrita droha satya sharasama nidosha vadanya mrudu shuchiya kinchana sarvopakara kashanta krishnaika sharana akama anihastira vijita shadguna mitabuk apramatta manada amani gambira karuna maitra kavi dakshamauni. A different quality has been described here. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes an introduction to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's book called Jaiva Dharma. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was a powerful acharya, the spiritual master of the spiritual master, of the spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, whose spiritual master was Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, whose spiritual master was Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he was a magistrate in the British court. And the British were very fond of him because he was very punctual, very pakka about his work. No loopholes, no loose ends. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written a book called Jaiva Dharma. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who happens to be the great grand disciple as well as the son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, has written an introduction to that book. And in that introduction, he glorifies Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur for all these 26 qualities. And he brings out how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur embodied each of these 26 qualities. But then, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes that Bhaktivinoda Thakur displayed all the qualities of a pure Vaishnava. But the most directly perceived was his eagerness to always remain fixed in the devotional service of the Lord without wasting a single moment. That was the study done by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There are many friends of Bhaktivinoda Thakur who have great things to say about it. So he has a friend who was a Calcutta High Court judge. And this friend of Bhaktivinoda Thakur also wrote introduction to the biography, A Glimpse into the Life of Thakur Bhaktivinoda. So he writes, I knew Thakur Bhaktivinoda intimately as a friend and a relation. Even under pressure of official work as a magistrate in charge of a heavy subdivision, he could find time for devotional contemplation and work. And whenever I met him, our talk would turn in a few moments to the subject of bhakti. And he would not waste a single moment. So many people have presented this. He would never waste a single moment. And the ultimate testimony to this is the documentation done by one of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's sons. His name is Lalit Prasad Thakur. He was a brother of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he has documented the life schedule of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So between 7:30 and 8:30 p.m. he would go to bed in the evening, 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. He would then rise just before 10 p.m. light his oil lamp and write books until 4 a.m. So he would be awake right from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. And then he would rest for a maximum of half an hour. At 4:30, he would wash his hands and chant on his beads. At 7 a.m., he answered all correspondence. At 7:30 a.m., read various religious and philosophical works. 8:30 a.m., received visitors until 9:30. At that time, he would walk back and forth. He would do some walking exercise. So he would do some exercise to keep the body fit. And then rest briefly from 9:30 to 9:45 a.m. 9:45. Very precise. At 9:55 a.m., the Thakur would don his uniform and leave for court in his carriage. So in this way, he would shave his head once a month. Many details given. The lawyers and Englishmen were astounded by the Thakur's capacity for work. At 10 a.m., court began. He would hear between 30 and 50 cases per day. Yet he finished by 1 p.m., just 3 hours. What took other magistrates 1.5 hour, he finished in 5 minutes. He took another 2 minutes to write the judgment in detail. His quality of work was first class. Of course, if he would have decided to work for 6 hours instead of 3 hours, he could have doubled. That's how we would think. At least I would think, oh, I can do so much in 3 hours. How much more I can do in 6 hours? But no, he was satisfied. This is the capacity Krishna has supplied, that I can do in 3 hours what others can do in so long a period. But let me be satisfied with this. Let me not try more and more. Because for him, spiritual service was the topmost. At 1 p.m., he went home, refreshed himself, returned to work at 2 p.m., from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. And then in the evening, he would translate some Sanskrit works. And then there was an evening bath, meal, etc. So even the meals are given. He would take light meals in the evening, heavy meals in the afternoon, etc., etc. So he had planned out his way. He is actually a Siddha Purusha from the spiritual world. But still, he sets an example of how one should plan out one's day, not keeping even a single lapse moment. Even Lord Krishna, when he was in Dwarka, he had his daily activities. Srila Prabhupada documents them in the Krishna book, Lord Krishna's daily activities. There are many activities of Krishna which are anusaraniya. There are two types of activities of a great personality, anukaraniya and anusaraniya. Anukaran means we can do as they are saying. But anusaraniya means follow his words instead of his activities. But Srila Prabhupada says, we can't imitate Lord Krishna's lifting Govardhan. We can't. We should not imitate Krishna's dancing with gopis. But in that chapter, he says, we can follow what Krishna has done. He used to do every day. Lord Krishna would get up 3 hours before the sunrise. Actually, Brahma Muhurta is calculated to be starting 1.5 hours prior to sunrise. And it lasts for exactly 48 minutes. That's how Brahma Muhurta is calculated. And Brahma Muhurta is the most favorable time for chanting japa. Because before the sun rises, you have not seen much and the impressions in the mind are blank. You don't know what to think about. So anyways, mind has no other occupation but to chant. Gopi Parandan Prabhu, who is a Sanskrit scholar, and he has read so many different literatures, he was presenting an analysis, a summarized analysis, that the best thing to do for chanting is complete 16 rounds before the sun rises. So he was quoting this from different scriptures. So Lord Krishna would get up 3 hours before sunrise, and it wasn't easy for him. He's a supreme lord, but all his queens would protest. They would not like, because they wanted to give pleasure to Krishna. They would hate to see the cocks crowing, hear the cocks crowing. So Krishna, despite all their protests, their unwillingness, Krishna would still get up. So if Krishna can do that, why shouldn't we do it? We are unwilling. Prabhupada says that austerity in the mode of passion means to give up something just because it's difficult to do. And in the purport, he says that similarly, if you have to get up early in the morning, but it is difficult to do and you don't do, then that's renunciation in the mode of passion. So Lord Krishna would get up and then he would meditate. But Prabhupada says, Krishna had no choice but to meditate on himself. Whom would he meditate on? But Prabhupada says, we also don't have choice. And we should meditate on Krishna. We should not meditate on ourselves. But Krishna would meditate on himself to set an example. Then he would take his bath. Then he would give so much charity, cows. And he would take care of all the citizens. Then he would go to his court. The timings are also documented. So in this way, Krishna had a very regulated daily activity. So in this way, these are some important points about how one can manage one's time. It's important to break up the day into parts and devote different parts of the day for different activities. It's very good to keep an activity log. How much time is going for each activity? Another important aspect is prioritizing activities. Actually, there is Professor Dennis Tonsing. He's written lots of books. And he is a professor at the William School of Law. He says in one of his books that if you have no control of your time, you'll have no control of your life. Many people have analyzed this. So, but even if you want to invest your time, you need to prioritize your activities. There are so many things you want to do. You want to learn all the instruments under the sun, all the musical instruments under the sun. You want to do all courses, MA, PhD, MBBS, MBA. So many desires we have, unlimited. But we have to prioritize what is most important. There was a school teacher, and when the class commenced, the school teacher had a small jar by his side. He had also a lot of elements brought from the seashore. So he asked one of his students, please fill this jar with stones, with big stones till the top. The student did that, exactly obliged. And the teacher said, okay, go back. And he asked all the students, so is the jar full now? And the student said, yes, sir, it's full. We can't put any more stones. But then he asked another student, can you try and fill it with pebbles? And the student struck to the student, yes, he could. So he put pebbles in between the big rocks and managed to fill that jar. So there was space for pebbles, not for rocks, but for pebbles. And then he asked, is the jar full now? The students were intelligent by now. They didn't reply. And then he asked one student to fill it with sand. Is it full now? The students didn't reply. Then filled with water. Is the jar full now? Yes, it is full. So similarly, if we fill our life with the most important activities, we will automatically find time for less important activities. Krishna Chandra Prabhu is such a busy devotee. He has so many responsibilities. He's also a big industrialist, Rishikesh Mafatlal. Now, he was explaining once in a seminar that for him, reading newspapers and being up to date with what's happening is quite a requirement. But then, the time he has allotted in the day is when he is basically sitting at an airport or waiting for some guest to come. So there are loose ends in the day, and he fills those loose ends with less important activities. So if you plan out, you can find that there are more useful things to do in the morning hours than read newspaper and pollute your mind with all the violence going around the world. So there are many devotees. I was actually recently in New York, and the New York Brahmachari Ashram, the devotees requested me to speak a Brahmachari class. So it was very embarrassing for me, because not only am I from a foreign country, a foreign body, but I'm also from a foreign ashram. So I'm married. But the devotees requested, I really prayed to Krishna. And then Krishna inspired that I could just speak to them what I've learned from the Brahmacharis. As a lot, the householders can learn from Brahmacharis. Sometimes the householders might argue that Brahmacharis, they can have morning Mangal Aarti because they have nothing else to do. It's not exactly like that. I've seen the Brahmacharis, they're doing preaching, and then they get in an argument with someone late into the night, and by the time they reach back the temple, it's late, right? So they could easily compromise on their sadhana, but no, they make their best effort to attend the morning program, which starts at fixed time at 5 o'clock. So they have a very regulated lifestyle, regulated hearing, regulated reading, and everything happens from time to time. Maharaj Ambarish was a great king. But it said that Maharaj Ambarish had time for so many details of spiritual activities. Savai mana Krishna padara vindayo vachamsi vaikunta gudanu varnane taro harer mandira marjanadishu shrutim chakarachuta satkato daye mukundalingala darshane drishav tad bhritya gatra sparshanga sangamam pranam tat pada saroja saurabe shrimat tulasya rasananta darpite. He had time for each of these activities. He had time for mopping the temple floor. Come on, he's a king. But it's registered in the Bhagavatam that he had time for mopping the temple floor. So it's not a matter of not getting time or being too busy. It's a matter of how important you treat that activity. Maharaj Ambarish treated mopping the temple floor very important. Embracing devotees as of prime importance. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam as of prime importance. He's a king with emergencies coming all the time, but he had time to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Shiro Rishikesha Padabhi Mandane. He's a king, but with his crown, he's offering obeisances. So like that, every desire he was dovetailing Krishna's service. It's easily said. This shloka can be easily quoted. But to live it is very tough. But the point is, if we are really serious about spiritual life, we'll find time. And that's what is exemplified. Even in our congregation, there are devotees. Like I've heard, Dayal Chandra Prabhu at his house, the shank, Mangalati shank, blows at 5 o'clock every day. So there are standards, many devotees, so many exemplary devotees in the congregation who have of really maintaining a regulative lifestyle so that Krishna consciousness is at the top without any compromise. I would like to just conclude my talk with an important point. Even if the husband and the wife come together, chalk out a plan for time and for environment, when we should chant, when we should and where we should chant, when we should read, when we should discuss Harikatha, and where we should discuss Harikatha. This is very good if the husband and wife come together in the case of a householder, or in the case of an ashram, the residents come together and decide a plan. Just like Radha Gopinath temple, the Mangalarti is at 5, other places it's at 4:30. But every temple has to plan out, chalk out a plan. What is going to be my daily schedule? Even if you do this, the modes of nature are very powerful. You may find it very difficult to sustain. But Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, 33rd verse, he's saying, Dhritya yaya dharayate mana pranendriya kriya yoge navya vicharanya dhriti sa partha sattviki. Krishna, in at least 2 chapters of Bhagavad Gita, is advocating the plus points of developing the mode of goodness. Anything can be maintained only in the mode of goodness. Mode of passion is very difficult to maintain anything. And this is represented by Brahma, Vishnu and Lord Shiva. Brahma is in charge of creation. Lord Vishnu is in charge of maintenance. And Shiva is in charge of destruction. The most tough part is maintaining something. And Lord Vishnu himself is in charge of maintenance because it's tough. But if one maintains mode of goodness, it is possible. Because that is what is explained here. Dhrityayaya dharayate. That determination. Mana pranendriya kriya yogena vyabhicharanya. That determination which is unbreakable and which is sustained by yoga practice. And that determination which controls the activities of the mind, life and senses. That determination is the mode of goodness. So determination in the mode of goodness is sustained by yoga practice, which means by Krishna consciousness. It cannot be practiced simply by mental gymnastics. So we have to develop the mode of goodness. Otherwise it's very difficult to maintain. Krishna also talks in the same chapter, 18th chapter, he talks about what happens when you have determination in the mode of passion. You simply keep changing. That's the nature of passion, right? Passion means always acting in emergency. Lion is in the mode of passion. The nature of a lion is it feeds, it keeps searching for its prey throughout the day. And when it is evening, it finds its prey, its food. But by that time, it's so hungry, it cannot wait. It is so arrogant when it attacks the prey. It just kills the prey, eats it, and it eats so much, and then it feels so tired, it sleeps. And next day, when it gets up in the morning, again, mission to catch the prey. And till the evening, it's again trying to catch the prey. And when it finds the prey, again, it's completely out of control. So this is lion, always acting in this mode of passion. So mode of passion is really not the most favorable platform for sustaining a regulated, organized spiritual life. So, as a final, last point, I also wanted to say that this entire process of regulating one's life, of systematically planning our lives, is not simply mechanical. It can be done as an offering to Krishna. Sanat Kumar Prabhu was explaining 2 weeks back in a lecture that Srila Bhakti Tirth Maharaj, in his last days, before he would sleep every night, he would write a letter to Srila Prabhupada in which he would express all the activities he tried to do as service for him throughout the day. So he would make it as an offering to him every night. Yamuna Mataji is another very senior disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And she was sharing with us that Prabhupada would often encourage her and her very close friend Dhyantarini Mataji to go in front of the deities and give a report of the activities they were trying to do throughout the day. The activities we are trying to do throughout the month. So it's also very good to often assess what we are doing and make it as an offering to Krishna. Because then we can be detached. Even when you make your plan, please give it to Krishna. Offer it to Krishna, because it's only for Krishna's pleasure and it's only by Krishna's mercy we can follow. But we have to make that endeavor. And as Bhurijan Prabhu says, we also have to realign, or we talked about alignment, but we may have to realign our lives from time to time. Sometimes you have added responsibility, so you have to realign a bit. He gives the example of bicycle riding. If you have to ride a bicycle on a road, you need to really maintain good balance, neither this side nor that side. But if the bicycle is on a bend, what do you have to do? You have to realign the bicycle. The angle has to shift, tilt, right? Otherwise, if you keep straight, you're going to fall. But we have to reassess our life from time to time and see if I'm on track. Yes, something else needs more extra attention. That's fine. But realign. Let's reassess. And let's not... It's very unfortunate if we try and live our life in a very disorganized manner, because that will affect our quality as well as quantity of service. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. I'm sorry, I just went 5 minutes over time. Are there any questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhuji, very, very much. Actually, many times we plan, then we fail. We plan, again we fail. Then we never plan. So, can you...
So, Bhurijan Prabhu was explaining that it might, this can happen if our plans are a little unrealistic. So we may have to take guidance, or we could even reflect with one of our good friends. What is there anything unrealistic in what I'm planning? But it is in all circumstances important to try and plan. It's ultimately our effort in alignment, right? Just like it's very difficult to align the different parts of a Boeing aircraft. But if you don't do it, it's just going to miserably fail, right? So if your life is not organized, at least if your life is not organized, you can be very chaotic and you might even lose taste, as Rupa Goswami says. You might lose every ruchi in whatever activity you do. On the other hand, even if you plan and you fail, at least you're conscious of what you missed out, right? It often happens with me. I have a quota of 1 hour, 1.5 hours of study. But then I get a phone call, which is very urgent. But it's at the back of my mind that I have missed my half an hour of study. Right? So it's also good practice to keep some buffer time in whatever you plan. So it's important for some urgent activities that may come throughout the day. So when you plan out your day, it's good to keep some buffer time. You feel excessively sleepy or you're feeling too tired, keep that buffer time so that other activities are not affected. There's some practical tips. Any other question or comments? So, yes, mic here.
Yes. Hare Krishna. Thank you for a wonderful class. Very inspiring to improve our devotional service, become more organized for the pleasure of Krishna. I have just one comment and a question. The comment is about Srila Prabhupada said one time that we should chant with our mouth and hear with the ears. And what is the question of the mind come involved in this? Yeah. And the question is that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he explained that in the morning we should beat our mind with the shoes, and at the night we should beat the mind with the broomstick. So what does it mean to beat the mind with the shoes, and what does it mean to beat the mind with the broomstick?
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu, for your comment. And regarding this question of what it means to beat the mind, I've heard from several senior sannyasis different explanations or different procedural details how you could do that. One way is actually hearing lectures, hearing philosophical points made from the Bhagavad Gita, because that's a way of beating the mind. Mind is always rebellious. A conditioned mind is always rebellious to disciplinary activities oriented towards God consciousness. But when you hear lecture, that's what you hear. All the lectures you hear, surrender to Krishna, chant your rounds attentively. I found it is a profound effect on my mind. Before I start chanting every morning, I hear for at least half an hour. And that's when I'm like getting ready and doing my exercises. And the hearing has a profound effect on my mind. It just pushes the mind down and sobers it. Hyperactive mind is sobered down. So hearing is one way. Some devotees recommend writing a prayer to the mind, having a peace pact with the mind. Dear mind, you've troubled me enough. I know you want to trouble me more. But just these 2 hours, would you like to take some rest? We'll have good friendship again after the 2 hour period is over. So you can be diplomatic with the mind. And some devotees, they really like to put Prabhupada japa and chant, because that once in a while when they hear Srila Prabhupada's chanting, that helps them regulate their mind. That's another way of beating the mind, because the pure devotee's vani is sanchari shakti. It has tremendous potency to pacify the mind. So sanchari shakti, that's how our acharyas describe it. So hearing Srila Prabhupada's japa is another way of beating the mind. So that is thankful. Thank you. So we will end here. Thank you again for your kind attention. Hare Krishna. So let us all try and align ourselves with the chanting of the holy names in Sankirtan for the pleasure of Sri Radha Gopinath. Thank you very much.